Hello and welcome to the Bare Naked Chat podcast, hosted by myself, Natalia Comis.
And me, Ashmi. This podcast is about what it is to be a woman in the world that we live in today.
Womanhood and everything that comes with that, from periods, sex, body image, the gender pay gap, or simply being the underrepresented 50%.
We're here to normalise subjects that don't often get spoken about. Women being women, talking for those of us who associate with the fabulous female gender.
Lanice Brothers is a registered nutritionist, women's health, hormones and menstruation coach and yoga teacher. She works with women who want to get control of sugar cravings, mood swings and hormonal acne, amongst many things. Lanice has helped many women with hormonal issues ranging from PMS, PCOS, fibroids, endometriosis, heavy, painful, missing and irregular periods, postnatal depletion, perimenopause and menopause. She set up her practice, Eat, Love, Move, to help empower and educate women to understand their bodies, advocate for better healthcare and heal. Welcome, Lenny.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's so nice to have you. What, just hearing all of that intro again, this reminds me of like how much of a powerhouse you are. There's so much in there.
Yes. And so much that can help all of us, especially women, to better understand our bodies and ourselves. So tell us a little bit about your journey, Lanice. Tell us a bit about you, how you got to be where you are now and what you do today.
Okay, so my journey with my health specifically started when I was a teenager. I got my period and it was always really heavy and really painful. And looking back on it now, knowing what I know now, I probably have or had a bit of endometriosis, and it was very debilitating. At least 2 days every month, I had to either take really heavy painkillers that were prescribed to me by my GP, or I had to miss school. I just felt like I was fighting with my body. And then I also was dealing with anxiety and depression. So dealing with that throughout my teens, and then went to university, and then I became vegetarian because I thought that would be a good thing for my health. I kind of had an inkling that what was going on with me with regards to my period and the anxiety and depression had, there might have been a connection to the way I was eating, but I didn't know for sure. So I became a vegetarian. And full disclosure, I was a terrible vegetarian. So I was a vegetarian for about 15 years. And then I realized over time that there was other things that I could do for my health in terms of exercise. And when I exercised, that made a difference and that improved my mood. So it was a really long journey for me, trying different things. And then eventually I started eating meat again, very gradually.
Wow.
And yeah, it made a huge difference to my health. And I, knowing what I know now, I was probably really, really anemic, had other deficiencies that were contributing to my low mood, my anxiety, depression, and also all of the period problems I had been having. And so I started becoming more interested in ways that I could use food to improve my health. I started investigating different nutrition approaches, not diets in the sense that I was trying to lose weight. It was more like, how could I use food to improve my energy, to improve my period? Mm-hmm. I decided to retrain as a nutritionist, and it's really the best thing I could have done. It opened my eyes to so many different things, and it really confirmed all of the hunches I had had all along about food and lifestyle changes being a great way to change health.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that's kind of my journey and how I got to be doing what I do now. And then after I got my nutritionist qualification, I kind of bolted on other things. So became a women's health coach and then a yoga teacher. And then I just got my pregnancy yoga qualification. So it's kind of like learning is a lifelong journey for me.
Yeah. For all of us, it should be anyway.
Yeah.
What do you think helped you the most, Lanice, in terms of, yeah, what was it? Was it the food? Was it the exercise? Was it a mixture of the things that helped you overcome those symptoms of like endometriosis and anxiety and depression and like all of those things that you just talked about? Do you feel like there was something, a specific thing that really helped you move forwards from it? Or do you think it was a combination of all of them?
I think it was a combination of all of them, and I actually can see it now. So in the last sort of 2 months, I've been really, really busy with my business and with my personal life. And the way that I've been eating has not been what you call optimal. Mm. And I notice it, you know, when I don't eat well and when I maybe eat too much sugar, I see it in my period. Like my last period was really, really painful. Mm-hmm. I knew it was because I had been eating a lot of sugar and not really eating very well. But what I know now is that I can make changes. After my period's over, I can start to make changes in my diet, and I will see the difference in my next period. It will be far less painful. And then if I keep going, the one after that will be even less painful. So I know that nutrition has a huge effect.
There's a lot of people that say, for example, if you do suffer from something like endometriosis, that actually going vegan or even vegetarian, but vegan especially, can be super helpful. And I know a few people that have actually, and that has helped them to a degree. And so I'm really fascinated by this idea of your diet making your periods shorter and or longer or less painful. What advice you have around that, and what thoughts you have about that specifically?
Okay, so I think there in nutrition, we talk about the idea of bio-individuality. So on a biological level, we all are we have things that unite us all, but there are so many things that are individual about us. So there's no one size fits all when it comes to health and nutrition. And something that works really well for one person won't necessarily work very well for another person. So when it comes to ways of eating like veganism and vegetarianism, they can work well for some women in terms of improving the symptoms around endometriosis, for example. But typically what I see is that women who become vegans or vegetarians, they feel so much better because they're just eating more vegetables. Mm. If you compare their diet or the way they were eating before they became vegan / vegetarian, they weren't eating that many vegetables. And we know that vegetables are very powerful for our health. All the different compounds, the nutrients, the vitamins, minerals, the antioxidants, have huge healing powers for a body. And when you have something like endometriosis, which is not necessarily a hormonal condition, it's more of a condition of an imbalance of the immune system, where you have this tissue, which is supposed to be inside the uterus, sitting either outside of the uterus, maybe on the ovaries. Some women have this tissue in their legs, they have it in their throat, they have it in their lungs. So
you have it in the, oh wow, so many diagnoses.
Yeah, so they find it very, very painful. And when you have this tissue, naturally the uterus, it gets inflamed when you're on your period. So this inflammation is part of the process of menstruation. But with inflammation, it's basically what that means is that your immune system is turned on. When your immune system is chronically turned on or chronically inflamed, it can lead to other issues. So inflammation can lead to the production of a lot of these different kind of hormone-like compounds called prostaglandins. And they're okay to have, but you want to have a balance. And when you have too many of one type of prostaglandins, that can lead to a lot of pain. And so when you're adding in more vegetables and adding in certain kinds of vegetables, that can reduce inflammation. And this is, we know that when you're inflamed, your immune system is out of balance and you're producing more prostaglandins, which then those lead to pain.
Mm.
So being a vegan and vegetarian isn't necessarily the cure-all for endometriosis. It's more about how do you eat in a way that reduces inflammation.
Yes.
Yeah, that is really fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that you say after my period is over. To me, that says I'm allowed to do things whilst I'm on my period.
Well, I just know that when I have my period, my energy tends to be a bit lower and I don't necessarily want to start trying new things. I will add different things in, but generally I know that after my period's over and I go into the next phase of my menstrual cycle, which is the follicular phase, my energy levels start to go up. And this is quite typical for the majority of women. Energy levels start to go up, estrogen starts to rise, testosterone starts to rise. So you're more willing to try new things. You're more willing to take risks because you have more energy. You have that testosterone, which is associated with risk-taking, but also increased level of confidence. Mm. And so if you want to start a new habit, that's actually the best time from a cycle perspective to do it because you're more willing to get out of your comfort zone versus right before your period in what we call the luteal phase, where it's all about you have more progesterone, and progesterone is the kind of comforting hormone. It's very soft, soothing, and you tend to just want to be around things that you know.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Can we go through that then, like from, like take a point in the cycle and go around that, like what happens?
Yeah, sure. So your cycle starts on the first day of your period. So day one of your period is day one of your menstrual cycle. And there's a kind of misconception that all cycles are supposed to be 28 days. And that's because a pack of oral contraceptives is 28 days.
Mm. Nah.
Yeah, that was obviously also designed by a man, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But in reality, a woman's cycle can vary cycle by cycle, month to month. Some women have cycles that are the same number of days, like clockwork, every cycle, but some women's vary. And different things that happen in your life have an effect on the length of the cycle. So if you're under a huge amount of stress, you might find that either your cycle gets a lot shorter or it actually gets a lot longer. Different foods that you eat. So if you're eating a diet that is, you know, has a lot of processed foods, a lot of sugary foods, that will have an effect potentially on the length of your cycle.
Interesting.
Yeah, lots of different things have an effect on the length of the menstrual cycle. And so when you're in what we call the menstrual phase, which can be anywhere from 3 days all the way to 7 days, so you're bleeding, and your energy tends to be a bit lower. Your estrogen levels are low and they build as you go through your menstrual phase. People use the analogy of seasons when it comes to the menstrual cycle. So
nice.
You just kind of describe this phase, the menstrual phase, as being the winter of your menstrual cycle. So no leaves on the trees, everything is feeling a bit bare, but you know you're about to go into spring where everything is going to rebuild and grow again. Typically during the menstrual phase, this is the time where we actually are a bit more analytical. And if you are more self-analytical, but also if you have a job where you need to do analysis and evaluation, this is a time where those skills will come into the forefront. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. I feel like this is such a interesting journey and there's so many aspects there that we can use in our own lives.
Yeah. And then from an exercise perspective, it's really about being really gentle with yourself. And I think this is really interesting, probably for you, Ash, as a personal trainer, knowing that if you're speaking to your clients about where they are in your cycle and knowing, okay, maybe in the beginning of their period, you want to advise them not to feel like they need to push through a workout, to be gentle with themselves, unless they feel like they have the energy, but know that it's okay to step back a little bit and listen to their bodies and give themselves what they need.
Mm. And this is during the bleed, you're saying?
Yeah.
Interesting, yeah.
That's really interesting. I always find that when I'm training myself, just on this point, that my strength levels go up a lot, but I have less energy for like speedy things. So I would train less in like endurance or long runs, but I would train more with picking up a heavy object and putting it down.
In terms of our mental clarity around that stage, around the bleeding stage, what does that look like, Lynise?
I mean, it really varies. I find that energy has a huge effect on mental clarity, but in terms of your skills, so evaluation and being more analytical, those sorts of skills come to the forefront. So it's not necessarily the time where you want to negotiate a pay rise, but it is a time where you want to kind of crunch the numbers to figure out, are you in a place where you can ask for a pay rise, financially speaking? Can you crunch the numbers to see, are you in a place to move on to whatever the next stage is in your life, whether it's renting a place or buying a house? Because we tend to turn inward during this phase.
Yeah, so it's like the research and development phase for ourselves or for whatever it is that we want to then do at the next stage.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Amazing. Okay.
We're ready, next stage.
Okay, so we go into what we call the follicular phase. And this is where our ovaries are stimulating follicles and getting ready for one of our eggs to attach to a follicle during the ovulation phase. So this is where we feel our estrogen rising, we feel testosterone rising. So I mentioned earlier about increased confidence, increased risk-taking. Mm. There's also this sense of increased optimism because you have more energy. There's more of a sense that, okay, I can take on something new. I have more confidence. And then also what's interesting is that research shows that our verbal skills are better during this phase. Our memory improves. And it's actually easier to absorb new facts.
Wow, that is so fascinating.
Yeah, this is a time where you've done the research for your pay rise or your mortgage or whatever. And then in this phase of your cycle, this is where you want to be going in and asking for your pay rise or negotiating that big deal or, you know, whatever you're looking for. This is the time to do that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because of testosterone in particular. And actually what's really interesting is that if you have a male boss, so women have these kind of menstrual cycles of hormones that are about anywhere from 21 to 35 days. But with men, they have 24-hour testosterone cycles. So their testosterone is highest in the morning and then it drops throughout the day. So if you have a male boss and you want to ask for a pay rise, it's actually better to ask them for your pay rise towards the end of the day.
Okay guys, block that. Everyone write that down.
So you've had your period, wait until the end of the day to go and talk to your male boss.
From a food perspective, so just actually jumping back to the last phase of the cycle, this is when you're bleeding, you really want to make sure you're eating lots of iron foods because you lose iron when you're bleeding. So things like red meat, so beef, lamb, if you don't eat beef or eat red meat, so things like chickpeas, lentils, broccoli, those are really good sources of iron, dark leafy greens. And then also things like vitamin C foods that if you're a vegetarian to help absorb the iron from the plant-based sources of iron. And then when you go into the next phase of your cycle, this is where we really want to continue to boost our energy levels. So we want to boost our blood circulation. So we're adding in foods like beetroot, like watermelon, and then oily fish as well. Because during our phase, this phase of our cycle, this is where you might see that your skin looks quite glowy. Your hair looks a lot fuller. And this is all around our bodies, priming us to look our most attractive. Because on a biological level, our bodies are trying to get us to reproduce. Mm. And so they're setting us up so we look our best.
Nice.
That's fascinating, isn't it? God, I feel like I'm learning so much. I find it really interesting as well, the point of making sure that you eat plenty of vitamin C with your iron, because iron is vitamin C soluble, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ooh, I feel like I need to, because I've only recently started getting my periods again, I feel like I need to like create a chart and be like, this week, you should be focusing on this. This week, you need to go for that new client. This week, you need to like just chill the fuck out.
Yes, that's such a you thing to do then, Natalia. That's so you. I'm waiting for that chat.
I need to like start putting little food groups for each week as well. Oh my God, I'm so doing this. I'm really excited about it, actually.
I can hear your brain cogs going. Hey. Just a little interruption here so we can summarize each section of the menstrual cycle to make sure you understood all this, as it's fascinating and potentially life-changing stuff. So the first phase of your cycle, as according to Lanice, is the menstrual phase itself, when you're actually bleeding. Day one of your cycle is the first day of your bleed. This is a research and development stage in terms of our mindset and how we are feeling. We tend to turn inward now, and it's a great time for analysis and evaluation. Nutritionally, we want to be eating iron and vitamin C rich foods to replenish what we lose during our period. Okay, so the next stage of your cycle is the follicular phase. This starts also from day one of your period, but continues until the time of ovulation. And it's this latter part of the time that we're talking about, post-menstruation. This is your body getting ready to let loose an egg. Both testosterone and estrogen increase, particularly testosterone. This is the time to negotiate, ask for that pay rise. Studies show that verbal skills, memory, and confidence are all boosted. Wonder Woman moments. Also, we start getting a bit glowy, getting that beautiful, delicious peachy glow as we start going towards our most fertile stage of our cycle. Nutrition-wise, we want to focus on circulation. So things like melon, ginger, or beetroot are all great. Then boom, we ovulate. Then the stage post-ovulation is the luteal phase, which runs up to the next menstruation, completing the circle. We tend to want comfort, softness, and familiarity here. We didn't actually go through that particular point about the luteal phase of Lanice, but from our own research, we found that you may want to focus on detoxifying estrogen by promoting healthy bowel movements, by consuming lots of fiber, as well as complex carbs to regulate mood, and keep blood sugar stable during the luteal phase. We are not professionals on this subject, however, but we just wanted to give you a little bit of extra information so that it felt like a full cycle. Thanks.
For so many like millennia, we women specifically have always felt some kind of link to the moon, and often women tend to have their periods around the full moon. And I feel like the moon's energy on with us and how it affects us actually has quite similar cycles to what you just described, which makes a lot of sense. Having said that, I've not had my period on the full moon yet, so
yeah, some women their cycle links up with the moon, so they ovulate on the full moon or they have their period during the full moon, but some women don't. And it's a really interesting one, because this is the area where people will say, well, there's no science behind this, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there's lots of things, especially in the area that I work in, where there is never going to be scientific evidence around it, because there's no money to research this sort of thing, or no one's going to fund this sort of study, because most studies are funded by pharmaceutical companies. And they're not going to make any money out of this sort of research. So there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that shows that there is a connection between cycles, the phases of a cycle, and the moon phases. But, you know, with a lot of things that women tend to go in for, it's around intuition and kind of anecdotal evidence. And that tends to be poo-pooed.
Yeah, it tends to be like thought of as too much woo-woo as well, isn't it? Like there's too much that's like talking about fairies almost.
Exactly.
I was chatting fairly recently with one of my mum's good friends, and she works with the female cycle, but in quite a... In a fairly woo-woo way, which is wonderful. But she has tracked her cycle for coming up to 20 years continuously. She has a specific book for her cycle.
Wow.
She had like one book every single year. She's had it for 20 years. And now she's been able to look back at how her cycle has changed throughout the years, which I found really fascinating. And she said that she had noticed that every single year during the autumn, during the fall time, that she had her period and her bleed on the full moon, and during the springtime on the other 6 months she had it on the new moon. So she noticed how
her
cycle with the biggest cycle of the moon, which I just thought was so fascinating. But it also makes it harder, I guess, to be able to pinpoint where your cycle is with your moon unless you're looking at the bigger picture.
Interesting.
That is so interesting,
isn't it?
So interesting.
I'm totally doing this. But that takes a lot of like determination and organization and willpower. 20 years, wow.
I know, it is. And obviously that wasn't like her initial plan to do that, but it just happened.
That would be a lot of notebooks as well, I feel, for me.
Anyway. Yes.
From a tracking perspective, it couldn't be easier these days to track your cycle. There are so many apps, and there are apps where all you need to do is put in the day that you start your period and the day that you end your period, and that's it. And it gives you the rest of the information. And if you want to go deeper, like so I have clients who are looking to get pregnant, so they're inputting lots of other information into these apps to get a bigger understanding of what's going on with their cycle and their period. So they want that deeper level of information. But even just knowing what day your next period is supposed to come and the next time you're ovulating and be beneficial.
Yeah. You see, I have a slightly, amazing, I guess, cynical view about this, in that I sort of think there are, like you say, so many apps for women out there that are great in helping us in many respects, but also that's a lot of data that's being collected about women and then sold off to the highest bidder, which, you know, in some respects could be good. It might mean that they actually start to create some things that are going to help women's health, but also I just feel a little bit like it's just, I don't know, it's just a bit of an invasion of privacy without us realizing. But I guess that's just technology in general as well.
Yeah, and I guess there's so much shared openly about everything to do with the male health system, isn't there? That there needs to be more traffic to do with the female system.
Yeah, but is it being used in the right way? That's kind of what I feel. I guess I just need to be a bit more positive about that.
No, I think you're right to be cynical around it, because there was a few stories, I believe it was earlier this year or end of last year, about a couple of apps who were found to be linking with Facebook and sharing the data that their users inputted to Facebook. And they've had to make a lot of changes into the way that they track and store data. But what's really interesting is that Apple, in their last developers conference, they showed the next iOS, and they have the whole added menstruation element in their health app. So it's a lot more detailed. And with Apple, they are very hot on privacy. So they don't sell any data to, like, it's not like Google or Android where your data is going directly to Google and then they use that for advertising. With Apple, it's very much a closed system. So you know that your data is going to be protected. So if that's a concern of yours, if you do have an iPhone, I would advise you to go to when the Apple, the menstruation element comes out, I think it's in September, to try that.
So is that the like health thing that Apple have on their phone, so where it kind of counts your footsteps or all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, they're adding a deeper menstruation element, because right now what it does is that it pulls in data from other cycle tracking apps. From September, they'll have a section in the health app to track the menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
It is interesting how much women's tech is increasing, especially around women's health, and how there's lots of new things coming out for it. So yeah,
that is interesting. If you weren't using the Apple app, what would be your top app for this kind of thing that you would recommend to people?
Oh, that's such a great question. So I have about 10 different apps on my phone, because I have to try as many as possible, because I get asked this question all the time. But what I find is that something that works really well for me isn't necessarily going to work well for someone else, because it's like I mentioned my clients earlier, my fertility clients, who they want to input a deeper level of data into the app. Whereas for me, actually, my favorite app is a really, really basic one, where all I do is I put the first day of my period in and the day it ends, and that's it. Because all I want to know is when my next period, when I should expect it. And I want to have a sense of when I'm ovulating. Like, I know when I'm ovulating because I know the signs of my body, but it's nice to get that little, no, I get a little notification saying ovulation day is coming. So yeah, it's very dependent on the individual and what kind of information they want to input. If your listeners are looking for apps that they want to download and try, there's a British company. Their app is called Moody Month.
Moody Month.
Nice.
That's really good. It's got so much information, and you learn so much about your menstrual cycle and your period and your hormones. There's another one, it's called Clue.
Is that about the same as this normal Clue?
Yeah. There is another one called Eve.
I think I've heard of Eve, heard some reviews about Eve, I think. I actually really wanted to ask a question that I've been wondering about for years. So I was told ages ago that, like, regardless of how long your actual cycle is, that it's like a phenomenon within women that you will always start your period 14 days after your ovulation, but it doesn't matter how long the part of your period is, part of your cycle is before that. But it's like a really interesting thing, and I don't know whether this is actually true.
Yes and no. So some women, they have what we call, it's called luteal phase defect, and it means that the luteal phase is the phase that happens after you ovulate. And so you typically ovulate midway through your cycle. So that could be depending on the length of your cycle, it could be day 12, it could be day 14, day 16. And then after you ovulate, you go into your luteal phase. And that phase can typically be split into two parts, where in your early luteal phase, you still have a lot of energy. Your estrogen is high, your progesterone is high. Then the second part of that phase, your estrogen and progesterone levels tend to drop. And some women have really short luteal phases, but then their periods tend to be shorter. And there's lots of things that you can do to lengthen that phase. Yeah, it really depends on the woman. Does that answer your question?
I think so. I think what I had been told was that everyone's menstrual cycle, is a different length. But that the funny thing was that there was always a 14-day gap between your ovulation and your actual bleed, which was supposed to be like a phenomenon, some kind of crazy thing that was just unexplainable, like how bumblebees can fly. I just always stuck in my head, and it was someone that told me this when I was about 12, and I was just, it, for some reason, it always stayed in my head. So I always knew that the cycle would be a different length per woman, but that particular section of the cycle was always the same according to this woman that told me that, and I had no idea whether that was true, whether that was just like,
I mean, it can be true, but for some women it's not.
How do you know, Lynise, if your hormones are unbalanced? Like, many women go through life just pitter-pattering, going about their day, kind of just like getting through it. How can they stop and realize that their hormones are imbalanced, what kind of signs can they actually look out for?
When we talk about hormones, there's lots of different hormones. So just to take a step back on that question, but when we're in the context of our conversation, we're talking about sex hormones like estrogen and progesterone. And what I see most typically in clinic is that women, they have too much estrogen in relation to progesterone. And those two hormones, you want to have, they're kind of, if you imagine like a seesaw in the playground, you want them to be balanced. And they typically will have too much, the estrogen will be up in the air and the progesterone will be with its feet on the ground. If you're still visualizing that seesaw analogy. And so symptoms of too much estrogen can be mood swings. So right before your period, you get really, really low moods. That might be you get a bit depressed. Maybe you get really irritable, get really angry. Because when you have too much estrogen in relation to progesterone, progesterone is our calming hormone. So there isn't, it's not balancing out the effects of the estrogen. So some women get really anxious. And this anxiety could be in the sense of like on a very extreme level where they just want to stay home. They don't want to socialize with other people. But it can also be just getting a real sense of like self-doubt and questioning themselves when they typically don't. Outside of, you know, this time right before their period. So things like skin issues come up. So women will get spotty right before their period. They might see that their skin starts to dry a little bit. Headaches, bloating as well. What else? Cravings aren't really connected with a hormonal imbalance. They're more about nutrient deficiencies. So the most typical thing I see is women craving chocolate right before their period. And that's really about a magnesium deficiency.
Yeah.
Chocolate has a lot of magnesium in it. I think it's something like 50% of the population is deficient in magnesium.
Wow. Maybe I am. I don't really eat much chocolate these days. God damn it, I need to eat more chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm that girl.
There are other food sources of magnesium.
No, that's it. It's only chocolate. Don't tell me anything else.
Yeah, only that.
So yeah, so depression, PMS, acne, things like you might feel like painful breasts. You might feel bloating. Those are typically the symptoms I see most often of hormonal imbalance. And then there are other things that fall out of that.
Yeah. Interestingly, a lot, as you were describing those, I was thinking, a lot of these are also side effects of being on the pill, the contraceptive pill, which is actually that one of the reasons I ask is because I was semi-sure, let's say, that being on the pill for me was affecting my hormones, which is why I was getting certain side effects and like going through some of the things I was going through. And even though I kind of put this to the doctors several times, no doctor would accept this fact or even mention that it could potentially be hormone related or anything to do with the contraceptive pill. And I have to say, since being off the pill, I've felt a lot better and actually a lot happier about periods. Like, I was really dreading getting my periods. I was really like, oh, this horrible thing that happens every month to people. But I've actually, like, it's actually been fine. It's like no issue at all. I feel like, yeah, so two things there, really. One, that the contraceptive pill can also, in my opinion at least, and I would like to know your opinion, affect your hormones, especially I was on the progesterone only one. And then the second aspect of that is us having this negative connotation towards periods and getting our periods as a nation even.
I would say that's still like a part, isn't it? Because I know that like I've always had a really like positive love for my period.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to balance that out, isn't it? Because I know that there's like a lot of talk about how it's something which is like disgusting or dirty, but
yeah,
but I know there's also like a lot of love for it and a lot of enjoyment.
I think it's getting more like that. I feel like there are still more, I would say more of a population still has a negative aspect towards it, mainly because of all the things that we've just talked about. Most women's hormones aren't balanced, you know, they're not using their menstrual cycle to their benefit and in the best way that they can. But and then people who do strongly advocate for it are in a lot more, obviously more positive about it. But I think most people don't have the best experiences or haven't had the best experiences in the past, and then that's stuck with them. And so it's harder to change that belief. But for sure, it is changing. I agree with you, Ash, in that.
I think you're, I mean, there's a lot of really interesting things in what you've just said. That firstly, around the kind of what I call the cultural narrative around menstruation, and how there are still a lot of taboos around talking about periods. And when I tell people, I work with women around their periods and menstruation, sometimes I watch the looks on their faces, because they look, you know, oh, surprise, like I'm talking about it so openly. And you know, I did this really interesting panel discussion about a month and a half ago, where a woman asked about cultural discussions around periods and how can we change that. And because, you know, in the UK, women, especially younger women, are more open about talking about periods and how they feel and period problems. And you look through the hashtags on Instagram and see more conversations around it. But then you have women who, you know, even so 30s, 40s, 50s, they're just not comfortable with it. And they, you know, they pass that down to their daughters and their sons. And, you know, people joke about sending their boyfriends to the stores to get pads or tampons, and they get embarrassed. But I think it's just like, that speaks to the idea that so many people are still ashamed of their periods, and then they pass on that shame to their partners, their sons, their daughters, when it doesn't have to be that way. But then you look at other cultures where there is a built-in, whether it's religious or it's actually cultural, this built-in shame around periods and it women's problems. And, you know, to the extreme where you look at places like Nepal, even though this practice has been banned, women and girls still get sent to menstruation huts, and they've died in these spaces because they're not ventilated, or they get raped, or they get attacked by wild animals. So I think just us having this sort of conversation, I think, is all, like, really revolutionary in a way, because it helps change this narrative that periods are dirty or something to be ashamed of, and helps women and girls understand that there's a lot of power that they can get through understanding their menstrual cycle, even things like what skills are strongest at certain parts of their menstrual cycle.
Definitely. Yeah. I think, interestingly, you say about passing it on to the children. I feel like I love that you love your period, Ash. And I know that we've had this discussion about your first period and how your parents were really excited and supportive of it. I don't know if you're willing to share a little bit about that now, just quickly, about what actually...
Yeah, it was hilarious, and at the time it was also deeply embarrassing, but it has set me up to have a really healthy relationship with my period. So I was living mostly, my parents are good friends, they weren't together, but they lived in very close neighbouring towns, so I was actually living with my dad at the time, and he had a little basket ready for when my period started, full of all the things I might need, including like new like pretty towels and like chocolate and stuff, as well as like tampons and pads.
Which I love. I literally love you.
I know, good feminist father. But then when my period actually started, my parents created a meal and celebration for me with old family friends. And we like spoke about hormones and like ate ceremonial food, but then also just play games and allowed me just to be a child as well. And it was really embarrassing, but it's also so lovely. And it was just part of a heritage that they wanted to kind of bring back from old stories that they had heard, I think. So it definitely helped me.
Yeah, and I think that kind of, I do think that your first experiences as a young girl do really stay with you and impact you in that respect and help with your beliefs around that. So yeah, for sure. And I just love that story, so thank you for sharing. Lynise, have you got any interesting examples of women owning their menstrual cycles and using it to their advantage, or examples of how doing so can benefit women in the world today?
I don't know if you saw the story a couple of weeks ago where I think she was a gynecologist in the US. She talked about how she had seen a few women recently who had been trying to vacuum out their periods.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's a horrible story, and these women were causing themselves damage. But I think what was really positive about the positive effect of this story is it started a lot of conversation about what's normal and what isn't normal around periods. And what I saw on social media was a lot of women talking about their periods and talking about how they have painful periods or they have heavy periods, but using a vacuum to pull out the blood isn't going to stop that. Yeah. So it was it's horrible. And I actually felt really sorry for the girls who had been doing it, because you could just see that they weren't educated about their period, and they must have been in so much pain or having so much bleeding that this was a kind of last resort for them.
Wow, I'm actually clenching my legs closer.
If we go back to young girls and education, I feel like that I agree, there isn't really enough education around the menstrual cycle. You know, everything that you've just said today, like, that isn't taught in schools or anywhere. And young girls don't really know, or a lot of young girls, unless their parents have explained it to them, don't really know what to expect. And also, many doctors prescribe the pill to young women and girls for all sorts of reasons without educating them on what that means and what the implications might be. And I just wondered what your thoughts were on that specifically.
I think it's such an interesting question, because firstly, there isn't enough menstrual health education, but in England, that is about to change. I know that there is some sort of legislation passed, I believe at the end of last year, saying that menstrual health education has to be taught in schools.
Amazing.
That is amazing.
Hopefully this will start to change the narrative around menstruation, where girls are being taught, and boys actually being taught in school about what's normal and what isn't normal. So it just, we can approach these things in a more of a neutral, not, I mean, maybe positive is a step too far for some people, but a neutral way than just being really negative about periods and it being kind of a subject shrouded in shame. To touch on your question about the pill and it being prescribed so early, I think it's a really interesting one, because when we talk about the pill, I always acknowledge that it has been hugely beneficial for women in terms of getting them to be able to go into the workplace and as a form of contraception. However, the lack of education around the pill, especially when girls are given the pill at 13, 14, 15, where their hormones are still establishing themselves, their bodies are still trying to figure out what is the right level of hormones is for them to produce. I think it's really problematic, because you then have women who have been on the pill for like 15, 20 years, and then they come off the pill, and then they start to learn about the side effects of being on the pill for a long time. So, you know, there's women who their womb linings have thinned so much from being on the pill for such a long time that they can't get pregnant because their womb linings don't get thick enough. The hormonal side effects of being on the pill. So you're putting synthetic pharmaceutical hormones into your body and then telling your body that it doesn't have to produce the right level of hormones on its own, the right level of estrogen or progesterone or testosterone. So your body's signals get mixed up. And there's a lot of research that shows that women, so the idea of pheromones, so we pick up smells from other people on a subconscious level. And that changes for women when they're on the pill, that gets dulled. And so you have women who have been with their partners for a really long time, and then they come off the pill and they find that they're not actually attracted to their partner anymore because they're actually picking up those pheromones from their partners for the first time.
Wow, that's so fascinating. That's really I feel like if it was me, if that had been my story and my narrative, that I would feel like I didn't know myself fully, or that I hadn't been able to be my full self for those years that I'd been on the pill.
Yeah.
Well, I felt a little bit like that the last few years, which is why I'm super happy that I finally came off the pill. Because, I mean, my libido had totally gone down. I wasn't enjoying sex. I wasn't really even enjoying, not enjoying, but I wasn't in the, like, sexual, in my sexual being, my sexual self with my partner. Like, I didn't feel like I was there. And that actually, and my body reflected that. My body just outright was, like, saying no to sex. And rejecting physically as well as emotionally and mentally. And I can outright say that 100% it has completely changed since coming off the pill, which is staggering.
That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely staggering. So I've only been off the pill for a few months. So like 100% it has made a difference to me. And I felt like that. I felt like I didn't know who I was anymore in that respect. I was feeling really depressed actually because of it, because I was like, what is going on with my body? Like, why is it not letting me do what I want to do? So yeah, I can completely relate to that.
I feel like throwing you a period party, Natalia.
I know, I should have a period party.
I'm gonna make you a crown out of tampon.
I'm all for it.
I know I've been on the pill a little bit here and there throughout my life. Like, I've had like a year on and like a year off and then a year on. But the last time I was on the pill, I ended up bleeding solidly for nearly 2 months. And I became so anemic that I was then banned from taking contraception or from going on the coil or anything like that for a while, because it was so dangerous for the levels of my iron.
Mm.
And I felt like that is like I feel like I've always been very curious about contraception and finding, like, that this doesn't seem to be like the perfect thing for anyone to use. And we've been talking more and more, haven't we, Natalia, about the male pill and whether this could be something possible or whether this is a positive thing and like what the tests are being like. And if your partner or yourself, if you are male, obviously, was going to take the pill, like, as a woman, would you still trust them, or would you want them to have their side effects? But would you also trust them to take the pill because it's still your body that can become impregnated?
Yeah. And actually, it's funny because, so we had this conversation with Hayley briefly in episode 2. And after that conversation, me and my partner, Chris, we talked about it. And I was like, well, would you take the pill and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, no, because there's not been enough tests and the side effects and stuff. And my initial reaction was a little bit defensive. I was like, well, I've had to be on it, so you should go on it. Then it was kind of end of story. And what I didn't know is what he went on to, continued on to actually do his own research around it, bless him, and came to me the other day and was like, well, actually, there's a new gel that's come out that they're testing now, which is a combination of progesterone and testosterone, and you literally, like, the men are meant to rub it on their shoulders and armpits and stuff, and that's meant to, I guess, lower the sperm count or stop sperm from doing what they do. I don't know.
Stop them from swimming.
Yeah. But what I found was quite hilarious is that in this article they were saying how if you put it on at night, not to to either have a shower afterwards or to have put a t-shirt on, because you don't want your female partner getting this on them, because then they'll just get a lot more testosterone in their system, which isn't ideal. So that was, I just thought that was like a nice humorous end to that article. but yeah, what do you have any thoughts around male contraception, Lunice, in general?
I think it's really interesting, but so there's some research that came out last year that where there was a male pill that had been developed, and they stopped the research because men were developing lots of side effects. Mm. But when we looked into the side effects, a lot of the side effects were the ones that women had been experiencing for the last 40, 50 years, ever since the pill had been developed. I think it was in 60 years in the 1950 was, I think, when the pill was first developed.
Yeah, it was just after the war, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so things like they were getting really depressed, their libidos were getting really low, they were getting acne, their hair was thinning. And I got really angry, actually, when I read this research, because I just thought, well, they stopped it immediately, the study immediately for men. But why have women been dealing with this for such a long time?
Yeah, and it's just the normal for women, isn't it?
Yeah, why isn't there a better option for us? Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but I do think it's really interesting that you're having these conversations with your partner, Natalia, because the responsibility of contraception shouldn't just sit in the hands of women. Mm-hmm. It needs to be equal. And I think this has to change a lot more, where men, they just think that, oh, well, she's on the pill, so it's okay. But, you know, we also have to think about STDs, which are actually rising.
Yeah.
But that it needs to be a 50-50 conversation. So, you know, women, after they have children, they go to the doctor, and the doctor will typically have a conversation about them, with them, about going back on the pill or some sort of contraception. And what I think needs to happen is that their partners need to go into that session, and it needs to be a conversation around, okay, have you finished having children? Are you open to having a vasectomy?
Oh yeah, totally. And you know what annoys me a little bit, or well, not a little bit, a lot, but I'll dumb it down for the sake of this.
Don't dumb it down.
Is men, like generally men who are having sexual relations with a partner or multiple partners, they're on the pill and they're just like, everything's fine, because like they're on the pill, I don't have to worry about anything. And then suddenly, you know, the woman gets pregnant and they're going, I thought you were on the pill, this is all your fault, like I can't believe you didn't take your pill properly. And suddenly the responsibility and the blame is again all on the woman. And I'm like, well, you could have worn a fucking condom, mate. Like, if you really didn't want kids that bad, you could have done something yourself about it. Like, why blame the other person when it's clearly just as much your fault? So that really gets me.
Yeah, and that speaks to the whole issue of it, this being seen as a woman's responsibility, when, you know, if people want to, are mature enough to have sex, they both need to deal with the consequences. And it's not just the woman's issue. And I think, you know, having more menstrual health education in schools will really hopefully start to change the thinking around this.
Yeah, and give men as well a bit more empowerment around that. I feel like the culture has allowed them and given them this idea that it isn't in their power if women get pregnant, or like it isn't their responsibility. And also, and so they kind of, I don't know, I feel like their anger is projected because of a lack of a feeling that they're not in control of it as well. And actually, if men and women had equal amount of responsibility and control over reproduction, then it would actually be a lot better emotionally for each person, and for men in particular. I feel like, you know, we're bashing men, but there are a lot of men who don't want children and who feel strongly about it, and those conversations just aren't had enough, and they don't feel like they necessarily can have that conversation that much either. So yeah, don't know where I'm going with that.
No, it's an interesting point, because it can never be the exact same thing, can it? Because women are, we are the ones that naturally are born with our wombs.
Yeah. Unless we start creating creatures and humans in artificial labs.
That puts the fear of everything into me. Such a purist over here.
I mean, I gotta say, it sounds better for my vagina and my vulva. Better. Yeah. All manner of complications in that one, though. yes. On that note.
There's a couple of questions that we really love asking our beautiful women that come on the show whilst we're just closing up. One of them is, which women in your life do you feel like you have been lifted up by?
Definitely, you know, I look at the women who have, there's a lot of women who have done great work in this space before me, who are, have done a lot of work educating women about their periods and their menstrual cycles, who I really admire. So there's a woman called Dr. Jolene Brighton. She does amazing work. She's based out of, I believe it's Seattle or Portland in the US, and she does a lot of amazing work educating women about their bodies after they come off the pill and things to look out for. There's another woman called Laura Bryden, whose work I really admire. And you know, I it's such a cliche, but someone like Oprah. I mean, Oprah Winfrey, yes. I love her so much. I love her message. I love that she's so candid about where her struggles and how she basically saying, you can have all the dreams that you want, but you have to do the work.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think those are the women that I look up to, that I really kind of stand on the shoulders of. I think they're amazing, and I love the work that they do.
Oh, lovely. Woo-hoo. Yes, Oprah.
Love that. Another question that we ask our guests is, what is bringing you joy at the moment?
Oh, that's a lovely question. So the work that I do, I find that I love the work that I do, but I find that it takes a lot of energy from me because, you know, my clients, and I love my clients, and I love speaking to them, but they're coming to me with their health issues and their health concerns. So I hold space for them, and I give them a really private, intimate space where they feel safe and they feel like they can trust me enough to open up. But I come out of these sessions and I feel really drained. And I think it's quite common for people who work with other people and who work in a kind of healing health space. And you see this a lot where people do get burnt out because they're not taking care of themselves. They're taking care of other people, but they're not taking care of themselves. So for me, what brings me joy is being able to just step away completely from this space and get in touch with the other parts of my life. So I'm a yoga teacher as well. So I teach a class every Sunday, and I love going into that class and just seeing people, helping people connect with their bodies. Mm-hmm. And that gives me a lot of joy. Also, just doing random silly things with my son. Like the last week, we've been singing The Greatest Showman soundtrack.
Yes. Oh my God, that's amazing.
And I mean, that's really, really fun. And it's kind of liberating as well, because we just sing at the top of our lungs and we just really let go.
Oh, that's so delicious. I love it. Yeah. I've got a beautiful image in my head.
I feel like we need to start singing it, but I won't. For our beauty. That's amazing. Thank you, Lynise. And I totally feel you as well on when you're working with people, you can feel very drained and it's easy for that to happen. And I always say you need to make sure your cup is full before you can start handing out energy or water or whatever it is that you have in your cup to others. So yeah, I completely agree with that. And I love that. I love how you're bringing joy into your personal life and your business as well.
On that note, I think it's time to call it a close, isn't it?
Say goodbye.
Have a night to finish on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lynise, for this inspiring and powerful conversation. I feel like there's so much in there, so much knowledge and support that we've discussed that will be really helpful for our listeners. And for listeners out there, please let us know if this has been helpful and if you are going to start tracking your menstrual cycle, if you have one, and also if it's helped you to have a look at your life, your body, and think about whether maybe you have a hormone imbalance. We'd love to know. So yes, thanks so much, Lynise.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
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 Thank you so much for tuning in to the Bare Naked Chats podcast. We love every single one of you. We will be back in a fortnight with our next instalment of healthy oversharing, juicy chats and educational convos.
You can rate, review and subscribe to Bare Naked Chats on iTunes, and please do, we will love you forever. This helps boost our rating and spread our love even further. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Bare Naked Chats, and you can email us at barenakedchats@gmail.com with any comments, thoughts or topics of interest you want us to delve into.
Catch you later, cats.
Adios.